Barbara, how wonderful.
Thank you.
Totally wonderful. What a complete delight. And let's dive in and maybe have some, if you guys are up for it, some super sex.
All right.
Super sex.
All right.
So just want to start with this idea of the evolutionary family that the three of us have talked about, because it's such an important idea. And like many things, you've got glimmers of it in the great traditions, but it wasn't yet ready to come into being because evolution hadn't provided the conditions for it to emerge.
Right.
So, for example, in Luria in the 16th century, he talks about having a soul root family.
Mm-hmm.
People who are related to your soul root that you recognize. Right? And in that recognition, you come together and you actually have deep commitment and loyalty to each other.
Yes.
And that emergence beyond biology, which is really where we're going. You know, racism is kind of one of the last vestiges of being rooted in biology. This movement beyond biology, and we get to kind of choose our families. And I think what you said, you said so many things that were so important, but one of them was that we have to be committed to them.
Yes.
It's not just, oh, you're my family, oh, you're my family, I love you. It's actually, you're my family, if you need $10,000, I have it for you.
Yes.
Right? Because what we do is we kind of pretend to be evolutionary families, mm-hmm. but then actually our real commitment, right, is to biology. And of course, mm-hmm. we want to transcend and include. We're totally committed to the families we're born with because we've got something to work out with them.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
destiny, and birth is destiny. And we really choose our families, and we're really committed to them.
Yes.
And perhaps we even have, you know, kinds of ceremonies, right, in which people marry, brothers can marry. There's West African tribes that have a male marriage ceremony when brothers marry, when they choose each other, or the family chooses each other. And we actually create rituals, right, to actually bring this evolutionary family
into existence. Do you have an evolutionary family, do you think?
I do, actually. Mm-hmm. I have a group of people. We haven't formalized it, but these are people that just, mm-hmm. they're my people, and they're available, and there's a group of people that I'm in touch with every day.
Yes.
That are my evolutionary family.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really an emergent thing. And
yes, and that's something
and
that
it's beautiful.
I think when I had my relationship with Sydney, I didn't do it because I had a partner.
Right.
And I used that partner was my family.
Right.
But so now I have to create the family.
Right.
By consciously choosing, and you have to be in touch with people. You can't.
Well, let's do it right here. You guys up for it? Evolutionary family?
Yeah, this is a good start.
This is a totally good start. I'm in.
This is an evolutionary family.
This is an evolutionary family.
It actually is. This
it
is
actually
really
is.
True. He's always been like an evolutionary son already.
Yeah.
And you, yes.
Yeah, new.
You're
new.
An evolutionary brother.
Amen.
Indeed.
So committed.
Committed. Oh, yeah. That's really great.
Yeah. Here we are.
Yes. You know, maybe the people watching the future human, becoming a future human, will want to choose their evolutionary families too.
And you can do it right now.
Yeah.
And figure, who are those people? They're actually already there. Right,
to name it and claim it.
Right, got to name it. It's already been presented by reality.
And you know, you might say there are certain things that you do. You stay in touch with each other. Number
right.
one, which I'm not good at. You said you write love letters,
outrageous love
letters.
You're
going to do that.
We're going to do that.
Yes, you're going to do that with me. So that's we'll do that as an evolutionary family.
Totally.
We'll write outrageous love letters.
Outrageous love letters.
And have to write to Daniel too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So a. Family act, one of the key ones is really seeing each other, right? And the exercise you kind of foreshadowed of, with the power vested in me, I see you and call it forth. I just have to start by seeing something in you that's so palpable is, and this is totally a unique self of Barbara and a super sex comment, is when you're talking, it is so intensely attractive. And I think everybody probably experiences that. I certainly do since the first time we met. And it's because there's a gestalt in your way of being, a kind of transmission of all of the content you're saying, where the way that you're being is completely a demonstration of and congruent with the content you're saying.
Yeah.
Because your teaching and your doing are an unavoidable expression of who you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no difference between them. And whenever someone's has awoken to their unique self enough that their doing is the inescapable expression of that, and they're fused,
yes.
and you see someone's passion and identity in that kind of fusion, I think that's the most attractive thing about humans.
Yeah. Because it's when the impulse of creation becomes out as a unique self,
yeah.
And your unique self is also in the voice. Remember, I was talking about bringing the, so there's a resonant tone, and I can tell the difference whether I'm really coming from the unique self, that the voice itself resonates with it.
The voice absolutely distinguishes. I mean, really, what you're saying, Daniel, which is just so wildly just good, you can feel the goodness of it, right? Not just the truth of it and the beauty of it, but the goodness of it, is that love, and this is key to our evolutionary emergence as a family and as a species. We said, the you know, in week two, that our love lists are too short. And never marry for love. Mm-hmm. Meaning, great to love the one you marry, but if you look to marry for love and then to get all of your love need out of that one relationship, mm-hmm. it's going to collapse because no one relationship can provide it. We've kind of exiled love, right, into kind of a narrow frame of romantic marriage. Then we've exiled it further into heterosexual marriage, and then we've exiled it further to the first year of heterosexual marriage, right?
So the love,
the honeymoon, right? Right. If that, so love's gotten very, very small. But love at its core, I think, Daniel, that's what you were saying, is love is a unique self-perception, mm-hmm. right? To love a person is to see them with God's eyes.
Yes.
Right. It's to shift perspectives and to say, when you're living your unique self, right, I'm allured to you, right? I'm attracted to you. Because the strange attractor of unique self, right, brings me towards you. And when you shift love from an emotion, right, at its core to a perception at its core, mm-hmm. for the first time you can train the perception. You can cleanse the doors of perception. The emotion comes, hits you today, it's gone tomorrow. Oops, it hit the secretary, up, hit somebody else. Right? But actually, if at its core it's a perception, and out of the perception the emotion emerges, mm-hmm. all of a sudden our love lists get very long.
And I think one of the differences between what you call normal human love and why it's been relegated to that
right.
infatuation place and outrageous love is the difference of, is it really perceiving who they are, or is it projecting fantasy?
Absolutely.
If it's projecting fantasy and you're not really seeing them, mm-hmm. then it dies when it interacts with reality.
Absolutely.
And so to go a little bit deeper with that, one of the things that I notice I'm really attracted to in wanting to join the evolutionary family with people is the consistency of being, that who they are when they're doing their teaching, their dharma, is always who they are, right?
Right.
And that's kind of the cleanup part of having owned the shadow of it and some of the grown-up parts. And so, you know, in all the years, Barbara, I've known you, for those of you who are watching, the way that she is on tape is the way that she always is. First thing in the morning, right before bed. And we were joking behind the scenes the other day that she's frothing with becoming as a way of being. Her being is just doing that all the time because it's who she is. And in the same, and that's why I'm not just appreciating what your teaching is, but really respect the being.
Right.
And the same thing with Mark, you know, his comment about that love expresses itself with commitment, that $10,000, that was actually like one of our first conversations when there was a recognition of him offering in a real way mm-hmm. Familyship. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And I think when you take sex to suprasex and you make suprasex the impulse of creation within you or the unique self, mm-hmm. and then I believe that the native desire to join, to co-create, is the most powerful impulse we have. It's more powerful than to join to procreate.
Right.
To join to co-create, because when you get near it, it's joyful. And it turns on and it creates the world that we want to see. It creates the most beautiful world we want to see is co-creation.
Yeah, and we have to talk about, and we'll talk about in the next session, the relationship between eros, supersex, and sexuality. Like, how do those actually play with each other? But just for now, right, the phallus of supersex and the receiving, if you will, kind of feminine receiving vehicle, right, is the unique self.
Yeah.
Right? The unique self both loves the moment open.
Yes.
Right, or to say it kind of more dramatically, right, the unique self fucks the moment open.
Yes, yeah.
Right? Right, and every moment actually fucks you open or loves you open.
That's co-creation.
That's
right there.
That right, and the supersex actually happens in literally every moment of reality.
Yeah.
And every moment is actually pregnant with something that can be born in it. And every moment's either open or closed.
It's very, very true. And I forgot to mention in my talk to beware of suprasexual promiscuity.
Right,
because if you, when I first got turned on to all of this, I would go to a party and I was agreeing to write a book with somebody, to make a movie with someone else, and to, you know, do a talk with someone else, and I came back with all these cards, and I couldn't remember their names.
Right.
So I would
the next morning.
That's known as the morning after, after saying yes to too many projects.
Right.
Because it's very attractive.
Right.
So one of the things of maturing in suprasexual co-creation is, like, if we said yes to do this future human, we agreed to do it, and we're doing it.
Right.
And there were lots of ins and outs and ups and downs, but it was an agreement. And it, then the follow-on to this, so this is something that is very important to learn when you are doing suprasex, because it's so much fun, is it's a commitment. In a way, the project becomes your offspring.
Right. And that no, Daniel, pick up. I'm hearing you about to say something. Go.
Part of the suprasex teaching that I think is so critical is, Mark was talking about great questions, and as we're moving from procreation to more co-creation, there's this question for all of us, for the feminine, for new relationships, to ask, what am I committed to create in the world that is as significant as creating human life is, that engages mm-hmm. as much of my capacity, that isn't just creating a human life, but what am I committing to show up? What is this partnership, you know, to create that's that significant? And that's that rewarding, that's that neurochemically altering, that's that, you know, evolutionary. It's a huge question, right? And if we don't ask that question, then there is a purpose that comes from procreation that isn't met, and we default to it.
Right.
And our population can't let us keep doing that. And when we speak about needing to get to a steady state population and the challenge of it, this actually answers something so clear, which is, as you talk about, and it ties the conscious evolution and supersex together, which is, as evolution is moving from unconscious to conscious, that includes regulation moving from unconscious to conscious processes.
It does.
And getting the aliveness that comes from procreation engaged otherwise is a huge key of making that happen.
And I want to say something here that it is really a challenge for many of us, is discovering vocation. Because vocation isn't just a superficial purpose. It's a calling that comes from your soul's
Vokari voice.
And a lot of people that I know, and when I'm teaching quite often, is people say, I'm longing to find my vocation. And I think one of the things we need to cultivate with future humans is, becoming a future human means you're finding that impulse. And it isn't just a job or a project. It's a calling of your soul. And that needs to be nurtured. It's not nurtured usually in any schools.
Yeah, I mean, it totally. And maybe just to wrap this in, three things. One is commitment that you talked about, Daniel. Commitment and the ability to delight in each other, right? Yeah. You know, and you know, as you delighted in Barbara, right? You know, just kind of like, and then this is really important, and I get to delight in this moment in Daniel delighting in Barbara,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
Right, you know, and the contraction of the ego is, why is he talking about her? Why is he not talking about me? Right? But that's what the ego does all the time.
Yeah.
And actually, then you let it, he's like, he's delighting in her, and then I delight in him delighting in hers, right? But the commitment thing's really big, right? Because if we don't have commitment, it's not going to work, mm-hmm. right? And commitment comes from the realization that as unique selves, we can actually replace the old models. So you talked about in your third section, you talked about the emergence of the co-creative masculine.
Yes.
And what we need to do is, as you kind of alluded and pointed towards, we need to replace the myth of masculinity.
Yes.
Instead of having the male, as our friend Warren Farrell likes to say, being the disposable one,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
who's the warrior, who's the protector, who has 95% of the death jobs,
yeah.
right, the masculine actually gets to be celebrated for his unique self.
Yes.
In which case the feminine has to shift and actually not only, right, admire the success object, right, but actually admire the emergence of the unique self, just like the masculine, right, has to adopt to the feminine and not only admire the sex object, but actually invite unique self. So unique self and conscious evolution come together to create a kind of structure that allows for the economic shifts and the familial shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we actually come together as a co-creative evolutionary family and we commit to each other, we're erotically filled. Right, we're alive.
Yeah. Well, that's a good place for the word telerotic.
Telerotic.
I didn't bring up this time, but telos, meaning higher purpose, and evolution always has this purpose, more conscious life, and eros. And I think in the co-creative human, there's a real powerful telerotic impulse.
Yeah.
a juicy love for higher purpose that includes co-creating with others. It's a really lot of love in there.
And that, you know? That telerotic movement, we're kind of sending over to you now as part of our extended family, and sometimes you don't know all your cousins. Here's the assignment. Identify four people that are part of your evolutionary family. Call them together and have a family meeting. We'll see you next session. Thank you.